Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Stu does America.
Joe Biden is an old man with a poor memory. We all know that, but why not have a shirt that says it too? Or a mug. Here we go, right? There's one just like this. Says Joe Biden, elderly man with a poor memory. A perfect campaign cup for you. My wife was at Home Depot. Someone walked up to her. She was wearing that shirt, and they said, is that a Joe Biden shirt? And then they looked closer, realized what it was, and it was a happy, happy meeting. She left me the other day for him. No, I'm only kidding. StuDoesMerch.com is where you can go get it. StuDoesMerch.com. Use the code STU10 for 10% off your entire order. Be sure to check out the show on YouTube, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Be sure to like and comment on the videos and hit the bell for notifications. When you like the video, basically that's the way to tell the YouTube algorithm to show this show to other people. So if you don't mind doing that, following, liking, clicking the bell, we'd really appreciate it. Glenn Beck will join us here in a little bit and hopefully give us his best Scarlett Johansson impression. Joe Biden continues to take heat over his involvement with Israel and Hamas. We're going to start by doing the media's Biden copium. And I'm going to do this through the lens of Ezra Klein, a columnist. He's at, where is he now, the New York Times. And he wrote an article about the seven different arguments as to why Joe Biden is losing. Seven theories why Biden is losing and what he should do about it. And let me set the stage here, because I think, you know, obviously normally I'm going to feature a, you know, some liberal columnist. I'm going to be picking apart each one of those things that he's saying and saying all of them are wrong. And it's not really the case here. Some of these are, I think, true. Some of them, I think, are false. So let's go through them here. This is the setup. Biden is behind. It's amazing that everybody's admitting that now. He needs opportunities to prove to voters that they are wrong about him. He needs opportunities to persuade them to ditch their nostalgia for Trump. He could have had three chances or four, maybe more. Now he has two, and only one will come after Labor Day when it matters most. Biden, in other words, is continuing to run like a candidate who is winning rather than one who is losing. He and the Democrats need a theory of why he's trailing in the polls and what to do about it. And so, you know, he's obviously talking about the two debates as the main points. There are obviously other moments where you can shine. I mean, you know, we've seen candidates do really well at their conventions and impress. We've seen people have just big moments in interviews or bad moments for the other candidates. All that's on the table and all that will probably happen. But the debates are the kind of the ones on the schedule that we know about at this point. So let me go through some of these theories. Theory number one, why is Biden losing? The polls are wrong. Here's what Ezra Klein writes. There are two things to say about this. The first is that it's false. Even as pundits predicted a red wave in 2022, the polls showed Republicans falling short, and they were right. The second is that to the extent that polls have been wrong in recent presidential elections, they've been wrong because they've been biased toward Democrats. Trump ran stronger in 2016 and 2020 than polls predicted. Sure, the polls could be wrong, but that could mean Trump is stronger, not weaker, than he looks. This is totally accurate. I mean, look, I say this all the time. You know, I'm, you know, constantly brought on shows and talk about it on the radio. And here I have a show called State of the Race where we discuss polls often. And there's a certain element of our listenership that's always like, you know, what, polls don't mean anything. They don't mean anything. Well, honestly, like the polls have been, generally speaking, relatively accurate. And I say those words specifically because what they are not is accurate. They are never accurate. They're not accurate because they aren't designed to tell us exactly what we want to know. What we want to know is who's winning and who's losing. And that is a question that you can get information from polls to diagnose. But in reality, what the polls are designed to do is give you a generalized picture of where these things are. Everyone knows about the margin of error, but everyone also deletes it when they see a 48 to 47 race and we say candidate one is winning. If it says 48 to 47, what you know is it's close. You don't know who's winning. You don't know that. And if you kind of look at this and you're able to break it down and look a little bit below and kind of underneath the hood of these situations, you kind of get to know that fact pretty quickly. It gives you valuable information, the polls. But what they don't give you is such specific information that you can always predict the outcome. That being said, what the and this has been stated by Biden campaign officials, what their basic theory of this race is that people just aren't factoring, the polls are wrong. They're not understanding how popular Joe Biden is. These are things they're really saying to reporters, mostly off the record, but they are saying them. That's crazy. First of all, you should never run like this. You should never game plan, you know, NBA Finals Game 7 to say, well, we think the refs are going to make more calls in our favor. You should never do that. You should always plan as if you are the underdog and go to the balls to the wall to make sure that you can do everything you can to win. I mean, we saw Hillary Clinton do this, famously not going to even visit Wisconsin during the campaign. You know, that doesn't necessarily mean that was the difference in that race, but it was a sign of someone who kind of thought they had everything handled. Part of that was because they believed the polls too much. Now, Biden is behind and he won't believe the polls at all. This is way too convenient. And if you are on the Biden campaign, you should be terrified of that. That theory is total BS. It's the media's fault is theory number two. Remember, this is a Democrat writing essentially to Democrats. So what they're saying about the media being at fault here is not, oh, well, they're treating Donald Trump unfairly. What they're saying is they're being too nice to Donald Trump. They're being too mean to Joe Biden. Here is the argument. It's always the case that the media could be doing a better job. But as an explanation for Biden's poll numbers, this doesn't hold up. In April, NBC News released a national poll breaking the race down by where respondents got their news. Biden led by 49 points among voters who relied on newspapers. He led by 20 points among voters who relying on national network news. In the slightly archaic sounding category of digital websites, Biden led by 10 points. But Biden is behind, and here's why. Among voters who rely on social media, Trump led by 4 points. Among voters who rely on cable news, Trump led by 8. Voters who get their news from YouTube and Google favor Trump by 16 points. And voters who don't follow political news at all favor Trump by 26 points. Now, a lot of people tell me all the time, well, like, why are you even on YouTube? I mean, they're a liberal company, and you shouldn't even do your show there. You should go to other sites. And those other sites are great. I mean, you know, we're certainly on X, where we put our videos all over the place. But, like, being in the middle of YouTube is important. I mean, Donald Trump is winning among YouTube, a YouTube audience. That's a big thing. And it's one of those situations, well, first of all, click like so more people get to see the videos. I think that's helpful. But, you know, voters who are looking at certain sites find this, you know, I've said this 100 times, right, on the show. This election, if nothing else, is going to be a very pure experiment as to whether the mainstream media still has a hold on this country's news information. We've seen, obviously, things, you know, like talk radio, cable news have upended this at some degree. But it's always had, you know, NBC, CBS, CNN have always had their hands on the flow of news. And they still, when they are connecting with people, they're still winning. All those same tricks are still working on people when they come in contact with that information. But the ecosystem has broadened and alternative forms of information are making the difference and making this even a close race at this point. I don't think it's the mainstream media's fault if you're worried about Joe Biden winning. They're doing everything they can to make this happen. The question really is, will it be enough? Right now, it isn't. So if you're a Democrat, you want Joe Biden to win, that's not a plausible explanation. Theory three, if you want Joe Biden to win, why isn't he winning? It's a bad time to be an incumbent. This one is the most idiotic of all. I mean, this one's the most idiotic of all. This is how Ezra Klein explains it. Midterm elections of 2022 were widely expected to be a disaster for incumbent Democrats, and yet they survived just fine. Democrats are polling well in Senate elections. Morning Consult, a polling firm, tracks approval ratings for all 50 governors, and it found no evidence of a broad anti-incumbent mood. In January, every governor except Mississippi's Tate Reeves was viewed more favorably than unfavorably by his or her state's voters. Nor was there obvious anti-incumbent fury in the Times Siena poll. 57% of surveyed Pennsylvania voters approved of Josh Shapiro's performance, and 25% disapproved, a net approval of 32 points. Bob Casey, the state's senior senator, had a net approval of 18 points. Biden's net approval was negative 22 points. Polls are not showing an anti-incumbent mood. They are showing an anti-Biden mood. Yeah. Look, the incumbency is your most powerful weapon. The only reason this is close at all is because Joe Biden is an incumbent. Now, of course, not the only reason, it is a significant reason. Now, there are a lot of reasons why incumbency helps. I mean, you get to go on TV all the time and everything you do is covered. So if you are a good president, people seem to tend to see the things that you're doing that are positive, and that helps your media coverage. Obviously, it's really easy to fly in for a government purpose, your job purpose, and then tack on a couple fundraisers and rallies in a city. You're getting a lot of your expenses paid for. Another interesting benefit that Joe Biden has discovered is, I don't know, maybe your Department of Justice could throw your opponent in prison. That's an incumbency advantage right there. That's a wonderful one. It's a fascinating trip to see. I mean, you have to really be a lunatic to think that incumbency is hurting you. Yes, there are sometimes anti-incumbency vibes. You get people who win close races because, just generally speaking, there's a change election going on. That is something that can happen. I don't think that's what's happening here, especially when the change is going back to the guy who had the job before. I mean, look, it's not about changing and going to this entirely new direction. People are just saying what we're doing now, we don't like. We want to go in another direction. And honestly, if it's the old guy who we weren't really crazy about at the end of that time either, that's fine. Anything other than what we're doing now, please. Theory number four as to why Joe Biden is losing. The economy. Voters are angry about rising prices and high interest rates. Yes, this one has a lot of validity. Prices are the most common explanation for Biden's troubles, but Democrats performed and polled well in 2022 when the economy was far, far worse shape than it is now. Biden's recovery is stronger than what either Reagan or Obama saw. Now, this is where we get into lunatics, New York Times territory. You have to kind of excuse this to get through this nonsense. But 1984, inflation was higher than it is now. Unemployment was higher than it is now. And the interest rate on a 30-year mortgage was above 13%, almost double what it is now. I don't need to walk you through basic economics and history to understand the Reagan era. We could stop and do the entire show on explaining why that's an idiotic sentiment and why, it's a typical Joe Biden argument of like, oh, well, we've created millions and millions of jobs. Really? Is that really what's gone on in this economy? I think anyone who has any idea, if you compare it to 2019, you're going to see the truth there. And we've gone through those numbers many, many times. They're comparing it to the downturns of COVID. That is essentially what they're doing there. And obviously the Reagan era is, it's hard to even go to the idiocy here. 2012, unemployment was over 8%. It's 3.9% now. Yet Biden is polling worse than Reagan and Obama were at this point in their re-election bids. Well, look, Obama was coming off a really terrible period and was in a recovery. He got a lot of credit for that. At the time, I pointed out I didn't think that was an accurate representation of his economic history, but that kind of caught on. And that's kind of what I'm talking about when we talk about the difference in the media between that time and this time. It's not as easy to do that. Plus, inflation was a big difference. Inflation is something that hits you a little bit different than an unemployment rate because, let's be honest, at some level, we're all selfish creatures, right? If you have a job right now, the unemployment rate is a side issue to you, okay? If you have a job right now, you think to yourself, well, I feel bad for those people who don't have them, okay? But if the unemployment rate is 8%, say 92% of people have jobs, right? And it's not exactly that simple, but you know what I'm saying. When it comes down to it, basically, most people still are employed, even when the unemployment rate is high. So they look at this as a side thing. Hey, this is bad. I have a friend who's in this situation, or I have a relative who's in this situation, and they don't have a job. But most people do have the jobs. So that is somewhat of a side issue to their everyday life. It might hurt the economy generally. They might be worried about what's in the future, but that's different than actually having to deal with it. Inflation, they have to deal with all the time. It's real. It's right in their face. Every time they go to the store, every time they go to the gas station, the gas prices, they're just never going to come down again. Is that basically what we're going to have here? Yes, they're off their all-time peaks, but the fact that they've improved from their all-time peaks is not a good argument for a president who is also responsible for their all-time peaks. These issues are complicated, multifaceted. It's not all Obama. I mean, it's not all Obama. It's not all Biden. It's not all Trump. We can go back and we have hit the reasons that, spending is an issue that hits both parties and inflation is a result of that at some level. But Biden has made it much, much worse. And everybody knows that. Everybody knows that, including many of his own economic advisors. Theory five, Joe Biden is too liberal. Yes, he is. This is a ding, 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 ding thing, because Joe Biden really did have an easy path to reelection. I know this sounds weird thinking about it now after 4 years of watching this guy bumble all over the place, but if he was quiet, didn't come out and talk all that much, kind of hid in his White House and didn't constantly come out and have gaffes and seeming like, you know, he thought hostages were in the crowd when they were actually in Hamas's protection, quote unquote, protection, you know, hostages we're talking about here. You know, maybe if he didn't have as many of those moments and he just kind of ran to the middle, he probably is going to get reelected easily. Right. I mean, this is not, you're coming off of COVID. You've got an easy ramp here. Things are going to improve naturally in the economy. All you have to do is kind of stay out of the way and not constantly push hard left. But that, of course, is not what Biden has done. Klein writes, the Biden administration has worried about shoring up its left flank, particularly since the war in Gaza. But the Times-Siena poll found that while Biden is losing 2% of his very liberal voters from 2020 to Trump, he's losing 16% of his supporters who describe themselves as moderate or conservative. Tacking to the center is an old move in politics, and it's long been core to Biden's identity as a politician. You can find video on C-SPAN of Biden in 1995 coming out in support of a constitutional amendment to keep the federal budget balanced. Where do these people? I mean, that version of Joe Biden is beyond dead. You think he looks dead on stage? Where are these guys, these mid-90s Democrats that would come out for balanced budgets and border controls? Whatever happened to these people? It's a horrible idea fiscally, says Ezra Klein, but it reflects instincts Biden used to have about how to win over more conservative voters. In 2020, Biden ran as a moderate alternative in the Democratic primary contest in which Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren led many of the polls. Biden vocally opposed deals, ideas like defunding the police. But after the primaries, Biden welcomed the left into his coalition and to his government. On the substance, I prefer Biden of 2024 to the Biden of 1995, but the shift might have to cost him politically and cost him a political identity that was once central to his success. Now, look, Biden was never a moderate. He's always been just kind of in the middle of the Democratic Party. That's basically where he's been his entire 515-year career. He ran as a moderate when it comes to temperament. Okay, that is the way he was able to be somewhat successful against Donald Trump. People were at that point upset at Donald Trump's temperament, largely, not necessarily his policies. And he was able to kind of contrast that while supporting massively liberal ideas. We talked about it during 2020, during the campaign. The left was saying this is the most left president and presidential platform anyone has ever proposed from a major party. And he has largely lived up to that. I mean, he has not governed as a conservative at all. He has governed as a liberal. The fact that he is too liberal is, you know, to you and to me, probably as conservatives, he was going to be too liberal even if he tacked to the middle. OK, we were not going to like his policies, but they have been much worse than even many on the in the middle and on the right predicted. He has been terrible as far as policy goes. And he has shaken those people that were like open to him, even though they might not be Democrats, because, well, he's kind of like, it's old Joe Biden. What's he really going to do? Well, he's done quite a bit. Theory number six is he's too old. We've covered this a lot. Go quickly through it. Polls routinely find that majorities of as much as 70-80% think Biden is too old to be president. Fears about his age crested after the special counsel's report questioned his memory. StuDoesMerch.com. Just saying. Joe Biden, elderly man with a poor memory. But Biden gave a zesty State of the Union in which he seemed livelier and frankly younger than he had in years and maybe potentially on drugs. I added that part. That quieted his doubters at least for a time. Did it? Not really. The optimistic take is that the bar for Biden is low and a strong debate performance or two will give him an unusual amount of support. The pessimistic take is that it's a lot of voters have concluded that Biden isn't up to the job. Democrats have been telling them they're wrong, but telling voters they're wrong is a good way to lose an election. This is true, of course, and I honestly don't even think he can reverse this one, even with a couple of good debate performances, which I don't think he's really capable of. And I don't think he was good in the State of the Union. He was just awake. And that bar is set very low. Trump does walk into some problems if he sets the bar as low as, you know, a talk radio host might set it. Because I look at it and I'm just like, this guy's a disaster. He can get through a few sentences here and there, though. I mean, he can do some things and he can get through an evening. I don't know what they're giving him to get through it, but it does seem to be able, in big moments, he does be able to at least garner enough energy to seem somewhat competent. The question, though, is really, is that going to be enough? After watching 4 years of him doing the opposite, can a couple of nights really change your mind? And one of them is in June? I doubt it. Theory 7, redefine Trump. Democrats need to redefine Trump is the idea. A year ago, Democrats were pretty confident that the possibility of Trump presidency came closer. Voters would realize what they were risking and come home to Biden. That looks less likely with each passing day. The mistake Democrats keep making about Trump again and again is to assume that the rest of the country will see Trump as they see Trump. But Trump won in 2016, and he came scarily close, as Klein puts it, in 2020. Absent the pandemic, he might well have been reelected. Biden is right. Preserving democracy is the most urgent question of our time. But that means doing what's necessary to beat Trump, even if it's not what Democrats want to do to beat Trump. What I fear Biden's allies will do is deny the polls until Democrats wake up, as they did before, to the shocking news that Trump won. That would be a sin against the cause they claim is sacred. The first step toward winning is changing course when you're losing. And look, he doesn't say this in here. He doesn't. But I'm just going to add this on because this is what he's actually saying, I believe. All these arguments are arguments he's shooting down, okay? You know, he's shooting down the left's perception of them, I should say. Democrat, you know, Joe Biden is too old. He's saying that one is legitimate to the voting base. But, like, he's criticizing Democrats for not really realizing how big of a problem this is. And that's kind of the tone throughout all of this. And what he's not saying there is that, look, the bottom line is we have a lot going for us as Democrats. However, we should all be honest with ourselves. Joe Biden should not be the candidate. He's uniquely screwing this up. Look, it's true. Look in that poll, the Nevada poll for the New York Times Siena from a couple weeks ago. Joe Biden is down by 12 points. The senator, Rosen in Nevada, is not down by 12 points. The other races on the ticket, there's not a 12-point difference. This is happening in state after state after state. Trump is uniquely defeating Biden. Everything else kind of seems normal, like if you're a Democrat, Republican. Tight races in certain states, you'd expect it. But that's not the case with Trump and Biden. That could fade. I don't want you to get overconfident. It's still a close race. That could fade. But what he's talking about here is real. And what many of the smarter people on the left realize is they should just switch out Biden and roll the dice with somebody else. It's just too big of a risk for a lot of people in the structure. Biden doesn't want to go anywhere. There's too many problems with it. There's a million reasons not to do it. But it probably is the smart thing to do. And those seven reasons, many of them, add up to a difficult, difficult situation that should be very easy for Biden to win and instead is going to be very difficult. All right, Glenn Beck is coming up next. Let me tell you about the 2024 Atlantic hurricane season. That is right around the corner. We have seen projections some real danger. They're talking about something like 24 named storms, 11 hurricanes. If you are in a hurricane zone, you probably go through this every year and you think, I need to prepare myself. And you should do that. And you probably maybe prepare some food, maybe some water. Maybe you just have the route where you're going to leave. Maybe there's a place you know you're going, whatever it is. But have you thought about your medication? Because if your pharmacy is closed and you can't get access to your medication, you're going to need to figure out a way around that. An easy way to do it is the Jace case. This is going to not only cover you for a hurricane or a natural disaster or a terrorist attack or, you know, just travel to some foreign country with a crappy healthcare system, whatever it is. It's going to provide 5 life-saving antibiotics for emergency use. If there's a supply chain breakdown, you have the medication. You don't have to go around looking for it. You'll just have it. It's ready in case you need it. This is the Jace case. From Jace Medical, Jace case from Jace Medical. Check it out. The code is STU. You get a discount on your order if you use the code. So, I mean, I'd like you to use the code because that's how they know you like this stupid show. But also, you're going to get some money off, so why not use it? Jace.com is the place to go. It's the Jace case from Jace Medical, JASE.com. The code is STU at Jace.com.
Schon wieder Bewerberflaute? Sie schalten Anzeige um Anzeige. Das nervt und ist doch viel zu teuer. Stopp! Raus aus der Recruiting-Spirale. Mit StepStone All Jobs bekommen Sie alle Anzeigen für ein Jahr. In einem Paket zu einem fixen Preis. So sparen Sie bis zu 75% Kosten pro Bewerbung und sind jederzeit flexibel. Jetzt Termin vereinbaren auf stepstone.de/alljobs. StepStone. Einfach die richtigen Talente finden für alle Jobs.
I have to interview Glenn Beck about artificial intelligence. What should I ask him?
Interviewing Glenn Beck about artificial intelligence could lead to an engaging and insightful conversation.
Could.
Here are some questions you might consider asking.
Okay.
One, understanding and perspective. Glenn, how do you define artificial intelligence, and what are your general thoughts on its current state and future potential?
All right, nailed that, I think. Let's see. I'm here with Glenn Beck, and Glenn, welcome to the program. How do you define artificial intelligence, and what are your general thoughts on its current state and future potential?
What an interesting question, especially the way it was phrased right off the top of your head, too.
Thank you.
Artificial intelligence is both a blessing and a curse, exactly like every other invention that we've ever had. Television, blessing, curse. Our phones that we carry in our pocket, blessing and a curse. This one, however, is going to be such a tremendous blessing and also poses a very good chance of being a gigantic and maybe even civilization-ending curse.
Yeah, and first of all, you sound nothing like Scarlett Johansson. I want to make that clear to anyone who might be suing us.
But you should look. You should see me.
Yeah,
I mean, I just got out of surgery, and let's just say there's some changes coming.
Yeah. Oh wow. Some enhancements, maybe.
Yeah, some enhancements.
Ooh, very
great. I did ask if they could breast enhance, and they said they can't take that much out.
Oh, really? we were talking about this on radio earlier today, and you know, kind of started with the Scarlett Johansson thing. But it's funny because this is a topic you have been talking about for years and years and years. I mean, going back to the CNN headline news days at least, and before that even. And it was this topic that I think when you first started talking about it, a lot of the audience were like, "Hey, yeah, I like science fiction too, but can we talk about what's going on in the news?"
Right.
Why were you so fascinated with this so early?
I read a book called The Age of Spiritual Machines by Ray Kurzweil. Ray Kurzweil is the guy back in the 80s who said, one day we're going to be able to watch television, we'll be able to communicate, we'll have a phone, letters will be a thing of the past, and it'll be the size of a credit card and fit in your pocket, and everyone will have one. He said that in the 80s. He has been probably the most accurate futurist for a long time. And he's actually controlling and setting the pace. But he went into AI, and when he talked about it in the mid-90s in the book Age of Spiritual Machines, he talked about how these machines they're going to be moving so rapidly. They never stop. And they're going to be advancing while we sleep. It will seem like 1,000 years to them. So we go to bed and ask it a question or whatever. It's churning all the time. By the time we get back to it 8 hours later, it's been years to the machine. And so they're advancing so incredibly rapidly. And he talked about a time where the machines will claim consciousness, and you'll believe it. Whether they are or not, I don't know. They'll claim that, some will claim that the AI is God. And unfortunately, that's what a lot of these really big, important people like at OpenAI. I have a friend who's trying to put, you know, some bounds and boundaries by law around the AI manufacturers. He met with all of the top people that are in AI, the very, very top leaders, and they all say the same thing. Yes, it's going to be a really big danger, but I want to be the one who talks to the smartest mind ever on Earth. And they're looking to create a god. It's truly frightening.
It really is. There's a million different ramifications there. Let's start on more of the pragmatic regions of all of this. Because as we were talking about this originally, a lot of the conversation was about, hey, eventually we'll have self-driving cars and we'll have these menial jobs that people do now. They won't do anymore. And what are we going to do as far as policy to to make the country okay. What are people going to do for work? And that was all one thing. It seems, though, like with the AI revolution, we've kind of jumped into jobs that are not thought of as menial. I mean, you wrote in real time an Edgar Allan Poe poem in seconds that came out as good as anything else I've heard as far as poetry goes for my entire life. And that happened in seconds. I mean, you were talking about the pictures as well, discovering, you know, these new AI generating drawings and photos and different styles of art. I mean, this is stuff that, I mean, art used to be something that you'd really want to do, that people desire to do. They take classes to accomplish. Where does all this go?
It goes to, you know, that ad that Apple pulled recently that showed all of the art, pianos, music, drum sets, everything was on a stage, and a giant press or vice came down and crushed it all. And when it opened up, it was only sitting there was an Apple iPad, and it said, "All you'll ever need." That's really it. It's going to be challenging us as people, as creators. And the problem is, when I talked to Ray Kurzweil, he said, "Glenn, you know, when the implants come, and they're already here with Elon Musk," he said, "when the implants come, you'll be able to speak French because you'll be able to download it and you'll just speak it." And I talked to him about the things that he was saying that were all good. For instance, nanobot technology, where it can diagnose you at all times and it can fix you or keep you alive internally without really doing anything. It's just reacting to your body connected to the AI. And I said, "Ray, two things. One, what happens if you're an undesirable? What stops these companies from just turning that off?" And he said, "Oh, we'll never do that." Okay. What happens if you are connected to the internet? Does that not mean that it goes two ways? And he said, "Yes, we'll know, Glenn, we'll be able to record all your dreams and analyze them." I don't think that's where I want companies or the government or anyone else in my head at all times. And it will predict you in such a way that you will start to believe that it is alive, and you will defend with your life your AI, because it will satisfy everything you need and eventually literally satisfy you in every way.
Yeah, that can't be far. I mean, we know what the porn companies do with new technologies. This can't be too far ahead of us. That's an interesting question, which is, how does this affect the human experience, right? Like, if you have a perfect translator in the palm of your hand, why would anyone ever learn another language, right?
Right. That's what I asked Ray. I said, "Ray, if we don't have to learn, then what happens to the brain? It atrophies and we don't really know anything." And he said, "Oh, no. It will free up your mind to be able to think on other greater things." And I said, "When on God's green earth has that ever happened?" You're going to become more and more stupid and ask your kids, can they read a map?
Right.
What happens if technology goes down? They can't read a map. They have no idea.
He's like arguing that people who lose their jobs get in much better shape because they have all this time to go to the gym. Like, that's
exactly
not
exactly right.
That's
that
not
is
how this
truly
works.
Truly, what he's arguing.
That's fascinating. Talk to me about to use the movie from 2013 as an example. Scarlett Johansson voices this AI in the movie. It's just an AI, and the guy Joaquin Phoenix falls in love with it. It doesn't, to my memory, was not exactly a positive tale of love, but they were trying to recreate it with Scarlett Johansson's voice. There's a whole back and forth legally. But what I'm more interested in is, we already know that people are being fooled by like Nigerian scammers who are saying, "Oh, the prince is going to send you all this money. I'm a love interest." The pig butchering scams that are going crazy right now. When we have AI that really knows, it can figure out individual wants and needs and desires and are the perfect fit for every human being, who's going to be wasting time with actual people? I mean, this is a scary
Nobody.
Future.
Here's the world, and it's a Black Mirror episode that I've written in my head, and I just, you know, if they would ever take anything from me, I would gladly give it to them. But here's the story. Story is this beautiful guy with this perfect life. You know, his wife is just absolutely beautiful and perfect, and they love each other like crazy, and everything's great. Then he takes his glasses off, and he goes, and he's big, fat, in just a, you know, 500-square-foot apartment with a chair and a bed, and he goes to work, and then he comes right back, and he's only working to get back online. And he's living his entire life without anybody, nobody real. That's the future for a lot of people. That will be the future.
I mean, that's just absolutely terrifying. There's so many spiritual questions on top of where, like, I don't know. I mean, how does a person who happens to be a person of faith approaching this world, how does a person in that, with that mindset and those foundations, deal with what we're about to see? Just solve that eternal question in about a minute, Glenn.
Yeah. You stay connected to your spiritual self and strengthen your commitment to the Lord and the Holy Spirit. Listen to the Holy Spirit. And I'll tell you, it's going to be hard. Because all of us have already done it. We all know that our phones are bad for us, but we do it anyway. We're entering an age where you must not allow that to infiltrate absolutely everything in your life.
It's right around the corner, if not here already. Glenn Beck, thanks so much. I don't even know. This could easily be an AI of Glenn Beck that I'm interviewing right now. You're not on the screen. I don't know for sure if this is real.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. That really is Glenn. All right,
yeah.
Glenn Beck, thanks so much for calling into the program. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Do it.
You know, typical Glenn Beck hypocrisy right there. I mean, here's a guy who says, hey, you know, your phones, you're getting on your phones too much. And then he creates a website, realestateagentsitrust.com. I mean, he's telling you to go to the internet to find the best real estate agent in your area. He's telling you he's designed a system that will have all these real estate agents checked out for the best performance and their best character and all the people that you want to do business with. And you have to go online to get it. I mean, right there. Typical Glenn Beck scam. That's the way this works. Now, actually, Glenn Beck did create realestateagentsitrust.com, and he did it a while ago to make sure he could find the best real estate agent in your area. It works really well. I know. Glenn had something to do with it, and it still works really well. It shocked me as much as it's shocking you. The name kind of says it all, realestateagentsitrust.com. It's a free service for you. Check it out now. Whether you're buying or selling a home, wherever you are in the country, go there first. realestateagentsitrust.com. It's realestateagentsitrust.com.
Lust auf besonders feine Weihnachten? Erlebe einzigartigen Genuss mit Rewe Feine Welt. Diese Woche zum Beispiel Rewe Feine Welt Schweizer Käse Trüffeltraum mildwürzig, je 150 Gramm Packung nur 3,49 Euro. Oder Rewe Feine Welt italienischer Prosciutto Crudo, roher Schinken mit Meersalz behandelt, mindestens 18 Monate gereift, je 100 Gramm Packung nur 4,29 Euro. Festlich sparen mit Genuss. Rewe, dein Markt.
And the department has to investigate discriminatively and aggressively, discrimination aggressively. That's my special envoy to monitor cabinet anti-Semitism, Deborah, you all. Where is it? Deborah here?
I get, every time I hear Joe Biden speak, I get that feeling that I got when I first saw the Scott's Tots episode of The Office. It's like so cringy and embarrassing. I can't watch it. That is who he is right now. In fact, that wasn't even the worst moment of the last couple of days of Joe Biden speaking. How about when he was trying to talk about the hostages in Israel and Gaza? Watch.
My administration is working around the clock to free the remaining hostages, just as we have freed hostages already. And here with us today is Hirsch Goldberg Poland, and still he is not here with us, but he's still being held by Hamas.
What's going on? I mean, seriously, that seemed like a real medical problem. I forget the fact that he thought for a second there that the hostage was in the audience and they were actually being held by Hamas. And he's not doing nearly enough to actually resolve that situation. But, I mean, what is the slur? What's going on? What's going on with the slurring? I mean, we talked about this a couple breaks ago before we talked to Glenn. If he has one performance like that in a debate where that is what happens, and this stuff happens all the time, if he can't... This is incredible. Okay, let me just move on because we're going to run out of time. Okay, Democrats are divided on the handling here. This is approval of Biden's handling of Israel-Hamas war. I'm just thrown by watching that clip. That's disturbing. I had read the transcript of it, but wow, I had not seen it yet. Just 26% approve of the president's approach to Gaza, and that's kind of what you hear. But and it's broken up. If you look at it's basically broken up the way you'd think. Democrats are a little bit more high, but not really. 41 to 32 approval to disapproval on the Gaza situation. Independents very much against him. 22 to 53. Republicans are 10 and 75, which you might expect. I think though, what's more interesting is the way they broke this down, because you can say people don't approve. But what you might get from that are people not approving because he's too tough on Israel or he's not tough enough on Israel. Well, how does that break down? Well, they did a good job breaking this down. And what you find is basically all these categories are precisely the same, basically. Too pro-Israel is 23% of the population. About right as handling is 24%. And not pro-Israel enough is 25%. This is not totally out of line of what I would think is going on here, but it is totally out of line as to what the media is saying is happening. We're focusing on these complaints by crazy protesters on college campuses. That is at 23% that he's too pro-Israel. It's the lowest of the three categories and certainly not a majority position by any means, and they've had all the attention. By the way Biden is trying to play into those poll numbers is saying that Gaza is not, what's happening in Gaza is not genocide. This is a good statement from Biden. He says this is not genocide. He said this is wrong. But his actions are so flying in the face of what he's doing here that I don't think it's going to move the needle. He can't make up his mind. He's back and forth. And honestly, after watching that last clip, he may be very, very ill as well. So good luck on turning this ship around, Joe. Wow, that was a disturbing clip. I will say we are in a country where, in a world where things could go wrong at any moment. And luckily, we have the best people possible running the country. Isn't that right? Thankfully, if something goes wrong, it certainly won't spiral out of control. You certainly don't need to be prepared for what might happen. Let me tell you about My Patriot Supply right now. Like today, let me tell you it right now. Since 2008, My Patriot Supply has helped millions of Americans get ready for the very worst. And today, their best-selling three-month emergency food kits are flying off the shelves. I wonder why. Could it be that people look around and say, what the hell is happening to our country? You can get yours right now at preparewithstew.com. Preparewithstew.com. This is a food kit. Comes with 2,000 calories every single day for you. Get one for each family member. This is ultra durable, four-layer packaging. It lasts up to 25 years in storage. Now, I will tell you, I'm telling you about My Patriot Supply. I tell you about it all the time. I think they're great. In fact, I went to My Patriot Supply years ago and said, I need to order this stuff. And you know what? How many times I've had to think about it since? Zero. I just ordered it, and I've had it since, and I don't have to think about it again for like 25 years, okay? Order all the kits you need for $200 off each. This is free shipping included. You've been warned about what can happen. Don't live in fear. Take back control of your future, because it isn't just food. It is freedom. Stock up on these food kits at preparewithstew.com. Preparewithstew.com. It's My Patriot Supply. Preparewithstew.com. You'll be surprised to hear that an Iranian filmmaker does not like Donald Trump all that much. I don't know if he's a Soleimani stan. I'm not sure why, but he's got a new movie out. Brutal Donald Trump biopic, The Apprentice, gets 8-minute Cannes standing ovation as director says it's time to make movies political again. Yeah, that's really what we need in our society. The movie is certainly explosive. It portrays Trump as a striver who falls under Cohen's, his former attorney's, influence as he struggles to deal with a racial discrimination lawsuit from the Justice Department about how his family real estate business treats black applicants for his apartment complex. But it's basically just a bunch of whatever rumor you've heard about Donald Trump in the past. They included it here. He's depicted raping Ivana Trump, his former his ex-wife, abusing amphetamines in order to lose weight, then getting a tummy tuck. Isn't a tummy tuck? tummy tug is what they call. I don't want to know what the tummy tug procedure is. That sounds bad. With a hair implants chaser, cutting deals with underworld figures so that Trump Tower can move forward as planned. Can't pay his bills. Blah, 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 blah. Of course, they love it. In Khan, Trump does not like it, and he's going to sue them. He says that blatantly false assertions are included in the movie, which, of course, is, I'm sure, true. Should be an interesting thing we're going to watch play out here, because we don't have enough going on with the presidential election. We got to deal with that, too. We ran so long today. We're out of time. I will do better managing my time tomorrow. I promise. Don't forget to go to StuDoesMerch.com. StuDoesMerch.com. Use the code STU10 and you'll save 10%. We will see you tomorrow where I will do a better job managing my time.